is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and this week's episode is going to be a focus on freestyle, as we hear from USCF senior judge Dolly Hannon about some of the do's and don'ts in musical freestyle. We'll also be hearing from Marilyn Heath about judges' responsibilities. And we'll also be including part three of the series on the mind-body connection with Sandy Veneman. As always, we'd like to begin by reminding you that the views of the host and the guests of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. We begin with some news. Tryon International Equestrian Centre hosted its first ever para-equestrian dressage competition at the facility, welcoming the Fall Dressage FEI CDIW and CPEDI 3-star, as well as the USCF National Show, each of those presented by Adequan on Friday, September 15th through Sunday, September 17th. The FEI CPEDI 3-star is also the USEF Para-Equestrian Dressage National Championships, sponsored by Deloitte. The 2017 USEF Para-Equestrian Dressage National Championships wrapped up on September 17th with Grade 4 athlete Angela Annie Peavy and Royal Dark Chocolate. They were crowned national champions. And the Grade 1 athlete Margaret McIntosh and Heroes earned the Reserve National Championship honours. Sunday's FEI freestyle tests accounted for the final 20% of the overall championship scores, with the first 80% split equally between Friday's FEI team test and Saturday's FEI individual tests. Athletes turned in high-quality performances in front of the grand jury of Elke Ebert of Germany, Portugal's Carlos Lopez, and Adrian Pott from the USA. Our first guest this week is USEF Senior Dressage Judge and Chairperson for the USDF Freestyle Committee, Dolly Hannon. In this segment, Dolly is going to explain some of the rules of the musical freestyle, what you should and should not do.
The competitor first wants to make sure that their music is recorded on a CD, and we highly recommend that it has been professionally edited, because if the sound levels are different or if the decibel levels are different, it can really come across as distorted, and it doesn't work over some of the sound systems where the freestyles are played. Some competitors now are trying to email their music to the show or show up and expect the sound person to download the music from the phone or a memory stick, and this is not correct. The rule is very clear that it must be presented on a CD, and there must be a backup CD, which has been a problem this year. People are not bringing the backup, and then if there's a music failure, they're out of luck. Go to the sound check, very important, and make sure that the music can be heard in all parts of the arena, but be careful that you're not choosing to play it too loud. This has been a big issue this year, and if the competitor insists that the music is played too loud, then it makes the judge's job impossible. Music cannot be accurately assessed when the judge is screaming at the scribe. This has happened to me several times in the past year, so think about what the judge's job is when you choose the sound level. Before you enter the arena, if the music is too loud or soft, you can signal the sound person to adjust it up or down, or better yet, have a representative in the sound booth that knows your music and knows what level it should be played at. If you are about to enter and they clearly have the wrong music, do not enter the arena. Signal the sound person and go tell them that this is not your music or it is the wrong freestyle. You may have actually brought a different CD and not realized it. Raise your hand when you're sure they have the correct music and start over. The judge will understand and will ring the bell again. Or if the judge is signaling you, go talk to the judge and explain what the issue is. If the music fails or there's a power outage during your ride or it is impossible to hear it, stop and go talk to the judge. The judge does not know if there is a problem, so you must go tell them and request to come back when your second backup CD is tested and it works. Then you can finish your freestyle. We've heard of a couple of instances of judges asking competitors to finish their freestyle without the music, and the judge would go ahead and score what they'd already seen. This is okay if your freestyle is almost finished, but it's not okay if the freestyle is less than halfway finished or if the judge has not heard the music for all three gates for the lower level freestyles. You have a right to finish to your music, and you will be allowed to either start at the beginning or start where the music failed. But just know the scores already given will stand and are not changed. If you do not have a backup CD, be polite and accept the fact that you will not be able to present your freestyle on that day. It's a tough lesson, but you must have a backup CD. Show management will always tell you when to come back, either during a break or at the end of the day. If you have a question for the judge or question about the scoring, you can request to speak with the judge through the TD, and please approach them politely. If you received a zero for a movement and you're positive that you did it, you have the right to talk to the judge through the technical delegate, because it's possible a movement could be missed, and with discussion, the judge might decide to make some adjustments. Videos may not be used to prove an omission, but you might be able to convince the judge, so it's worth a try. If you do forget to include a required movement, it will lower your score. Potentially, you'll receive a zero for it if it's clearly left out. And it will also lower your choreography and possibly your degree of difficulty score as well. If you're positive that you missed a movement, try to fit it in before the end of the music. You could have an extra diagonal added in the choreography near the end, so you could repeat a movement that had mistakes in it, or if you clearly forgot a required movement. If you get lost during your freestyle, try to take a breath and figure out where you are so you do not find yourself in the wrong place or repeating movements in the same direction. You must know your music well enough that you know what to do if there's an issue, and always try to hit your musical changes between gates and for the various paces, which are the variations of the gates. If you get ahead of the music, ride deeper into the corners and take up more time, or collect your horse and wait until the music changes. If you must add an extra circle to get caught up, that's fine. It will be scored and can make the freestyle look a little disjointed in the choreography. If you get ahead of the music or behind, make the transition when the music changes, regardless of where you are in the arena. Remember, the judge does not know your choreography, and always hit your halt at the end. It looks bad to be standing there waiting for your music to end or have the music stop when you're still riding and trying to catch up to the end of the music. This affects the impact of your ending and is the final impression that the judge has as they fill out the bottom mark. I have had competitors get confused and do two movements the same direction, like, for example, a canter pirouette, and not realize that they have done this, and it really affects their score. The freestyles are so much fun and are definitely on many of our competitors' bucket lists, especially now that our USDF finals are becoming so popular. But they also can be miserable if your music fails, or if you can't hear the music, or if it's so loud that it's scaring your horse. Be sure you've done your homework and practiced your freestyle enough times to present a polished performance, and know what to do if and when problems arise. Please read the rules, both USDF and USEF, and take responsibility as a competitor if there is an issue. The USEF rulebook includes very clear guidelines as to the musical freestyle. If you review DR 129, the rule on the musical freestyle, you can get information about what to expect in presenting your music at the horse show. Music is mandatory. It's the responsibility of the competitors to select the appropriate music for the ride and present to competition management on a compact disc CD recording to be given to the announcer at least 2 hours prior to the start of the class. Sound checks must be provided to riders in freestyle classes for no fee, either on the day prior to the competition or prior to their scheduled class. The requirements and timetable for scheduling sound checks must be published in the prize list. Each rider will be permitted one representative in the sound booth to supervise the handling of the CD if so desired by the competitor. In the case of riders' music failing before or during a freestyle test, and in cases where there is no backup system, the rider can, with the permission of the judge at C, leave the arena or start at a later time. There should be minimum interference with the starting times of the other riders, and the affected rider should return to complete or restart his or her test during a scheduled break in the competition or at the end of the competition. The rider may decide whether to restart the test from the very beginning or to commence from the point where the music failed. Judging must restart at the point of interruption. In any case, the marks already given will not be changed. Under penalty of elimination at the discretion of the judge at sea, a rider must enter the arena within 20 seconds of the music starting. So that's the USEF rule concerning music and format. So apparently many competitors and some freestyle designers are not aware of this.
And finally, a reminder that the CD must be clearly labeled with the horse's name, competitor number, class number, and freestyle level. And also make sure there is only one track on the CD. Do not provide a practice CD to the announcer. And be sure to know what is clearly allowed and forbidden in terms of included movements and transitions for the level of freestyle to avoid incurring a 4-point penalty. And do not present your music to the sound person 15 minutes before a class. And our thanks again to Dolly for explaining the rules for the musical freestyle. And our next guest this week is L Program faculty member and USEF senior dressage judge Marilyn Heath, who's here to tell us about the judge's responsibilities. Marilyn, welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're going to talk today about the responsibilities of a dressage judge. What makes a good dressage judge, Marilyn?
A good dressage judge is somebody who judges consistently, constructively, fairly, and honestly.
That's a very good way of summarizing it. And, of course, it comes with a ton of responsibilities, though. It's not all glamour. So let's talk about those responsibilities then.
Well, actually, some people think that it is a very glamorous job. You get to travel all over the country. You stay in some nice hotels. The other side is you stay in some not so nice hotels, and you're stuck in a judge's box in the rain, the sleet, the snow, the 105-degree sun. So it's not as glamorous as one would think off the top of their head. Being a judge is an awesome responsibility, and it has many facets. The judge must be responsible to uphold the highest standards for the sport. This comes first. There are judges who tend to want to give away high scores to remain popular with the riders and with the show organizers to assure being asked back. And this is a detriment to the sport. And it's also, in the long run, a detriment to the rider as well, because it's not helpful. It's always nice to get an 80%, but when it's not earned, it's harmful to the sport. Then to go on, the judge must be an advocate for the horse and a guardian of good sportsmanship. Now, to be an advocate for the horse, one must be very careful to reward horses that are trained with harmony in mind and to not reward horses that are coerced into doing what the rider wants. it should look like the horse is doing of its own accord what the rider wants. And sometimes it looks like the rider is working harder than the horse, and it should not look like that. The judge should also give comments that will biomechanically explain the issues. For instance, about bend, if the comment says, horse needs to bend to more to the inside, what effect is that going to have on the rider? Well, the rider will pull on the inside rein, probably. And the only thing the hands can control are the head and neck of the horse, and the rest of the horse will go wherever the horse wants it to go, like the shoulder will fall out. However, change that comment around and say, horse must stretch from inside leg to outside rein. And that gives the concept that will help the horse and gives the rider the idea of the correct aids to use to achieve the appearance of the bend. Another way of putting it, must rotate the rib cage to the outside or must stretch to outside rein. It conveys much more correct results. The judge must also be dedicated to continuing judge education in order to become more knowledgeable and more insightful and therefore more helpful to the rider, to the horse, and to the sport. The judge represents the U.S. Equestrian and the USDF, represents the show committee and the competitor. The judge must place each class correctly, must evaluate the basics in every movement, and must be consistent throughout the day, throughout the show, throughout the season. The judge must observe the USEF and USDF codes of conduct. They must be respectful of show management, other officials, exhibitors, volunteers, and spectators. They must dress and act professionally, be discreet, be punctual, charitable, and cooperative with show management. The judge must keep current on judging philosophies, which do change through the years. They must keep current on rules and know how to interpret the rules, and they must know how to uphold the rules. Even if a judge disagrees with a rule, it is the judge's responsibility to uphold the rules as they are written.
Just talk about some of the qualities that you think a judge personally brings to the role of a judge.
Personally, the judge must be honest, must be capable of sitting in a judge's box all day, no matter what the weather, must be conscientious. It's a very, very important role.
It's multifaceted, and of course experience counts for an awful lot, and you will have seen, I'm sure, some of the things that are misunderstood when it comes to interpreting the rules, both from a judge's perspective and a rider's perspective. Let's talk about those, because I think a big one is the errors that you put on a test.
Well, absolutely, and that's what I mean about how to be current on the rules and how to interpret the rules. Errors are one of the most misunderstood part of the rules. In teaching judge education programs, I run into this all the time. People just keep asking over and over and over again about errors, and then they take a test at the end of whatever course it is, and errors are the most often incorrect answers on a test. It blows me away because I think that we are very thorough. But the thing is, it's a judgment, and that's really why they call us judges. There's two basic kinds of errors. There are errors of course and errors of test. So the error of course is when the horse deviates from the pattern of the test. That's the easiest kind of error to deal with. It could be, for instance, the horse comes down the center line, halts, salutes at X, comes on down to C and turns the wrong way. If that's missed, it messes up the whole test. The whole test has to be done in mirror image. Or if the rider makes, and this one's a little harder, if the rider makes a 10-meter circle at R instead of B, as the test requires, that's an error of course. And in those instances, the bell should be rung and the rider straightened out. This is why we encourage in the L program that people use diagrams. We don't require, but we encourage them to at least make the diagrams. It's important to know where a movement begins and where a movement ends in order to know where to score a deviation. An error of test is when, for instance, the rider fails to take the reins in one hand for the initial salute or for the final salute, or if the rider posts to the trot when the test specifies sitting trot. So the rule of thumb for the application of the rules about errors is that the judge should treat each situation to the advantage of that competitor that who is making the error, while at the same time remaining fair to all the rest of the competitors. And now, for instance, consider this. A rider in first level test three comes across the diagonal, and the movement calls for the rider to change the lead through the trot at X. Well, this rider picks up the wrong lead. Therefore, the rider goes canter, trot, and then canter on the original lead. Now, this particular rider did not feel the problem, and she continues down the next long side to lengthen the stride and the canter, still on the wrong lead. Now, this wrong lead is going to affect each movement that is completed still on the wrong lead. Now, if the judge were to ring the bell when the horse picked up the wrong lead right after X and inform the rider that the horse is on the wrong lead, the rider would have the advantage of correcting the lead. So she would get a minus two. Then she would be asked to go back across the diagonal and do it again. Well, maybe she got a 10 that time. So now she ends up with 8. However, if the judge had not rung the bell, it could well be a 4, depending on how quickly the correction was made, and the subsequent movements would not be affected. So who has the advantage there? The rider who knows it's the wrong lead and makes the correction, or the one who's stopped by the judge, given an error and a chance to make the next attempt a 10? You have to remember, every rider does enter the arena with a chance for a 10 in every movement. So if the rider picks up the wrong lead, you ring the bell, she goes back, she gets a 10, and the next rider comes along and they do a change from the one lead through the trot to the other lead, but they don't do it very well and they get a 6. So that rider only gets one chance. So in that instance, it's better not to ring the bell, but just to go and keep on scoring. So that brings us to the fact that a judge really should not give an error for a wrong lead. I have a friend who did ring the bell for a wrong lead, and the rider announced that he hadn't taken that lead in 17 years. So it's not a good idea to give an error for a wrong lead and dig yourself into a hole like that. It's always safe for the judge to ring the bell for an error of course or an error of test unless the judge is wrong, which does happen. It's very embarrassing. It does happen, and again, that's one of the reasons that we recommend diagrams, especially during the learning process. However, there are times when ringing the bell would be an unnecessary interruption, and it can frazzle some riders and affect the rest of the test. So often judges decide not to ring the bell, but to deduct for the error. Now, this is another place where it becomes a little bit tricky, when to give an error and when to ring the bell and when not to. If, for instance, the rider fails to take the reins in one hand for the initial salute, the judge might elect to not ring the bell, but should give an error. Now the rider comes down the final center line and doesn't take the reins in one hand for the final salute, the judge may not deduct for a second error because the judge did not warn the rider the first time. So that's one thing that confuses some people. Similarly, the rising to the trot when sitting is required. The rule states that the judge must ring the bell and inform the rider that if this is repeated, it will be an accumulating error, which will entail elimination on the third offense. So if the rider comes down the center line in second level test three, halts in the sitting trot, halts at X, and then rises through the entire test, the rider should have been eliminated on the fourth movement because she's risen through three movements. The other thing that we need to keep in mind that the rider should only be penalized for one error in each movement. If the rider makes a mistake in the pattern of the test, the judge rings the bell and explains to the rider what she did wrong, where she should pick it up. The rider goes back, makes another error or a similar error. It's still the same movement. The judge rings the bell, explains again. The rider makes a third mistake. It's not an elimination because it's all in one movement. The other thing that confuses the issue is inaccuracies. We like to think of inaccuracy as a modifier. You know, we have a formula for judging. Basics plus criteria plus or minus the modifiers equals the score. Well, we think of inaccuracies as a modifier unless it decreases the difficulty of the movement. If a rider makes a 12-meter circle where a 10-meter circle should be, the judge has to consider that it does decrease the difficulty. It could simply be pilot error. The rider could purposely have made the circle larger to avoid the difficulty. Or if the horse was not well enough balanced to complete the correct size circle, then the horse can drift out. In any case, there should be a deduction from the basic score value. Sometimes a judge will decide that an inaccuracy should be an error. Now, take first level test 2. There's a lengthened trot across a 3/4 diagonal from M to V and again from H to P. If a rider rides the full diagonal, M to K or H to F, is it an inaccuracy or is it an error? And that's a judgment. If the judge thinks it's an inaccuracy and modifies the score down a half a point or a point, that is the kind of thing that a judge might decide. However, if the rider will then not learn that they were really off course. So my inclination is to take a point off for the inaccuracy and comment that it should be to V or it should be to P. Be kind with the score, but be clear with the comment. So these are areas in which a judgment must be made in an instant, and that's why we're called judges. But I think that's where a lot of the confusion comes in with young judges or even experienced judges in wondering how to handle things. So now, I'd like to get back to what I said in the beginning. Be responsible to uphold the highest standards for the sport. The judge who gives away high scores to remain popular and assure being asked back is a detriment to the sport. I often have a rider come up to me at the end of the show, or if I'm looking at the scores, they'll say something to me about, thank you for my good score. And my response is invariably, you earned it. And I, as a judge, appreciate more a comment like, thank you for your judging. I found your comments to be extremely helpful. And to me, that's the biggest compliment. But there seems to be an increasing pressure by some competitors to control which judges are invited to judge at shows in their area. Some trainers come to shows bringing many students with them, and they wield a heavy stick, and they try to control show managers to invite high-scoring judges. Now, just think what this does to the sport. The students want to earn scores to qualify for regions and to qualify for awards. The trainers have happy students if their riders get good scores. And what sometimes happens is they then get to the regional competition where the judges are held more accountable because they're now judging on a panel and the riders are then disappointed in their scores. So it all comes back to be responsible to uphold the highest standards for the sport. Be an advocate for the horse. Be a guardian of good sportsmanship. Give comments that will encourage harmony and correct training. Be dedicated to continuing judge education to become more knowledgeable and insightful and to comment to promote correct training. And to summarize, judges must strive to follow these guidelines while being as positive and encouraging to the riders with their scores as their conscience allows, and strive to be helpful and constructive with their comments. Judges have an awesome responsibility to the future of dressage because, remember, riders and trainers will produce what judges reward.
That's great, Marilyn. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to come on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
And finally, in our education segment, we have part 3 of the series called Mind Games with Sandy Veneman, PhD. Sandy is going to teach us how to learn to up our mental game and improve our partnership and performance through simple, proven psychological techniques, including cognitive reprogramming and counter conditioning. The focus this week is on relaxation exercises.
Okay, so we're going to learn some new skills today. All right, so we're going to go ahead and do a couple exercises. If there's anything that your doctor says you shouldn't mess with your back or you've got a heart condition or things like that, even though I am trained and one of my degrees is in nursing, I can do CPR. I would rather not do that in the middle of my talk. Okay, so you're allowed to skip it if you don't like, but I try to encourage people to play. So the first thing we're going to do, you can stay in your seat, and we're going to learn how to deep breathe. So for right now, I want you to sit up straight, have good posture. Put your hand on your abdomen, and for the girls, this is the part of your body underneath your boobs. Oh, they're recording this. Okay, underneath your breasts. And for the boys, look where the girls are putting their hands. Keep it on your own body. All right. So right now, you should probably not feel a whole lot, maybe some grumbling, because you haven't eaten lately. But does anybody feel anything significant? It's because you're not breathing. Most of us don't breathe from the time we're like little bitty toddlers until we die. All right? And for real, little toddlers do deep breathing. It's just a natural thing. So what I want you to do, we're going to breathe in, and don't do it yet. We're going to breathe in really deep through our nose. And then we're going to breathe out through our mouth. Okay, so big breath in through your mouth. Hold it. And let it ooh. I said through your mouth. In through your nose. Let it ooze out your mouth. Big breath in through your nose. Let it ooze out your mouth. What did you feel your abdomen do? It moved a lot, didn't it? Okay, so deep breathing is like the simplest thing that you can do to relax your body. This is something you could do kind of unobtrusively, like if you have a job interview, you could do that if you're kind of anxious because you're in the job interview. Don't do anything like, or they're not going to give you the job. They're just going to think you're a freak. But you can kind of do that quietly, and you can do that on your horse too. So big breath in, big breath out. So I'll remind my riders, it's like, let's try to do a breath every time you pass a letter. Because that way, at least you can't hold your breath throughout the entire test. And if you watch riders, quite often, they hold their breath through the entire test. And that's an anxiety thing. So that's just called deep breathing. Easy to do. I'm going to make you do that during this other thing, too. All right, so now I would like for you to go ahead and find a comfortable spot on the floor. And lay on your back. And if you can't do that, that's okay. All right, so we're going to do a thing called progressive muscle relaxation. All right? So progressive muscle relaxation is just a technique that helps you learn to tell the difference between tense muscles and non-tense muscles. Most people really can't tell the difference, okay? So it will help you learn to tell the difference. And if you practice this, it will help you learn how to relax different muscle groups. And so when you're on a horse, you'll be able to relax yourself on command if you practice. And I'll have people say, but you don't want to teach everybody how to do this stuff because then they'll beat you. And I'll go, no, they won't do their homework. Okay. So we're going to do one muscle group at a time. And you're going to tense it as basically as tense as you can go. And then when I tell you to, you're going to release it. All right? So hopefully you can remember, because you kind of don't want to do some things wrong or else you train yourself to be tense. So we're going to start with our toes. So if you could scrunch your toes up. So I think about this as like people get anxious and they try to hang on to their stirrups like it was a bird on a perch. I can hold myself on if I can grab my toes really hard. Okay, so scrunch yourself up with your toes. And you're going to hold that for about at least 20 seconds, which is an enormous amount of time, I'm sorry. It is. It's a long time. All right, I want you to scrunch up your toes, scrunch up your foot and your ankle. Can your ankles be tense? Oh, yeah. And when your ankles are tense, you have a tendency to bounce against your stirrups instead of having that nice flexible ankle. We see this a lot. So don't let go of it yet. But what we're going to do, we're going to let go of things in an order, not all at once, so that you actually learn how to differentiate between different muscle groups and relaxing them at different times. Okay, so you're going to relax your toes, and now you're going to relax your foot and your ankle. Okay, so scrunch up your toes, scrunch up your ankles, and scrunch up your calves. So people scrunch up their calves on horses all the time, too. It's amazing how scrunched people can get. It's not time yet. Okay, remember, just one group at a time. So relax your toes, your foot and ankle, and now your calves. We're going to get on to some of the bigger muscle groups that are way fun. Okay, so now we're going to scrunch up our toes, our feet and ankles, our calves, and our thighs. So if you can, lie flat, but scrunch up your thighs really, really tight. Get those thigh muscles tight. It's kind of hard if you're not practiced at this to do individual muscle groups. Just tighten up those thigh muscles. So what happens when your thigh muscles are tight on a horse, they get really round instead of flat. And so when your muscles are really round in the saddle, you have less surface area against your horse and less surface area to talk to them with. In addition to that, particularly when we get to the butt next, it gets really round like a little rubber ball. And so it starts going ba-boing, ba-boing, ba-boing. You're not able to follow the movement particularly well. Okay, so relax just your toes, your feet and ankles, your calves, and now your thighs. It's very hard, and it's, again, this is something you have to practice at home. But when we get to the end, you'll love it. And what happens with people, I'll ask my students, have you been practicing that progressive relaxation? And they'll lie and they'll go, yeah. And I'll say, you're not having any trouble? No. And I know that they're usually lying to me because I start off with them doing this right before bedtime. And the people that really practice it a lot, they're like, I got a problem. I just keep falling asleep. Okay? So it's a good way to fall asleep if you're tense too. Okay, scrunch up your toes and your ankles and your feet and your calves and your thighs, and now scrunch your butt. Okay? All right, relax your toes and your feet, your ankles, your calves, your thighs, and your butt. Okay, did anybody feel that they suddenly are getting a little flatter on the floor? That means that your muscles are actually relaxed. So when you started off, you were not relaxed. And I don't think I'm that scary, so you shouldn't have been all, you know, stressed out and tense. So that's probably what you carry with you all the time. Okay, scrunch up your toes and your feet and ankles and your calves and your thighs and your butt. Now scrunch your entire back. Oh yeah, people are good at this on a horse too. That whole tension, you can't really do your back without your boobs and stuff too. Well, you can't scrunch your boobs. Well, yeah, there's muscle in there. So you're all scrunched up. So once you start scrunching your chest, you aren't really able to do breathing very well. Your horse really feels this too, okay? So they start feeling that whole, oh my God, she's not breathing. The bear's getting closer. Okay, relax your toes and your ankles and your feet and your calves and your thighs and your butt and your whole abdomen area. So at this point, you're probably getting a little relaxed, so we're going to add the other stuff. So now I want you to take one of those big, deep breaths. Remember, in through your nose, out through your mouth. Another big in through your nose, out through your mouth. So anything that we do together becomes like the same thing in classical conditioning. So if you practice that deep breathing when you're actually relaxed, even your deep breathing becomes more effective because it will automatically relax some of your muscles if you practice this. Okay, scrunch your toes, your feet, your ankles, your calves, your thighs, your butt, your abdomen. I want you to scrunch up your upper arm. Scrunch it so that you've got one of those big Popeye muscles going. It's all different muscle groups, so it's so great if you learn the difference. Okay, relax your toes, your ankles and your feet, your calves, your thighs, your butt, your whole abdomen, your upper arms. Take a big deep breath in through your nose. Let it out through your mouth. Another big deep breath in through your nose. Let it out your mouth. Scrunch your toes, your feet, your ankles, your calves, your thighs, your butt, your whole abdomen, your upper arm, now your lower arm. Try not to do your hands at the same time. It's really hard. No, it's not hard. It's a challenge. All right. So you should be like popped off the floor at this point, right? All right, this is how you pop off the saddle when you get tense. You're popped. Okay, relax your toes and your ankles and your feet and your calves and your thighs and your butt and your abdomen and your upper arm and your lower arm. Big deep breath in through your nose, out through your mouth. Do you feel a difference in your arms? All right, so if your arms are relaxed, your shoulders are relaxed, because we did the whole abdomen thing, you're going to be able to keep a much softer connection that's elastic with your horse. If you've got tension in your arms, it's hard to take that elastic connection with the horse's bit. Okay, scrunch your toes and your feet and your ankles and your calves and your thighs and your butt and your whole abdomen and your upper arms and your lower arms, and now scrunch up your fists like, oh, you're going to punch somebody. Okay? Really, really tight. So a lot of people ride with their arms like this all the time. You'll say, okay, close your fingers around the reins, because they think they're being really soft by opening their fingers. And then they do the whole clench thing. So this is what you're doing on your horse quite often. This is not a happy feeling for them. Relax your toes, your feet, your ankles, your calves, your thighs, your butt, your entire abdomen, your upper arms, your lower arms, your hands. Big deep breath in, big deep breath out. And when we get done, don't hop up, okay? We're going to be down here on the floor for a little bit. Scrunch your toes and your feet and your ankles and your calves and your thighs and your butt and your whole abdomen and your shoulders and your upper arm and your lower arm and your fist. Now I want you to scrunch up your neck and your face all the way to your forehead. Okay, so relax your toes and your ankles and your feet and your calves and your thighs and your butt and your whole abdomen area and your shoulders and your upper arms and your lower arms and your hands. Now your neck and your face. Big deep breath in. Let it out through your mouth. Another big deep breath in, out through your mouth. So now that you're relaxed, we would like to use this wonderful classical conditioning to try to train our body to do this on command. But you have to practice it a lot, okay?
And our thanks again to Sandy Venneman, who initially recorded this segment at the 2016 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. And finally this week, we have some reminders for you on upcoming deadlines. The next USDF-USEF Young Rider Graduate Program will be held January 13th and the 14th, 2018, in West Palm Beach, Florida. Advance applications must be received by September 30th of 2017 or by October 15th, 2017, with an increased fee. Applications are available on the USDF website, or you can contact the USDF office for more information. The USDF-USEF Young Rider Graduate Program is made possible with funding support provided by the Dressage Foundation. Horses and riders that have met all of the year-end award requirements will be ranked in the 2017 Adequan USDF Year-End Awards Preliminary Standings. We urge you to take a moment to check the preliminary standings for accuracy, and if you find any errors or have any questions, please contact awards@usdf.org. In order for a rider award to be recognized in the 2017 competition year, the Rider Award application must be received by September 30th, 2017. Late applications will be accepted until October 15th, 2017, but with payment of the applicable late fee. You can find out more information by emailing rideawards@usdf.org. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget, this podcast is a free download from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. And if you follow us on social media, you can hear when the next episode will be available. As always, you'll find lots more educational information and resources on eTrack on the website at usdf.org. And thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.